Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, and welcome back to Realistic Sustainability. I'm Mike, and I'm here with a fully dressed Nick. He put pants on for me.
I did. I'm not going to lie. In the morning before my day starts, I don't start. So I was sitting there drinking coffee in my PJJs, enjoying it. And then I got a message saying, hey, what are you doing? The fat signal was in the sky. I had to answer the call, get dressed, and be here. So here I am.
I'll tell you, all I had to do was tell him the topic for this week's show. And it was like, he got the zoomies. He just got up, got dressed, ran downstairs. He's ready for this show.
I'll tell you, it was Brucey's time to shine. I was sliding down the banister, everything.
Oh, good fun. Well, besides the show, so this week we're going to talk about commercial fish farming. But before that, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm tired. I'm sore. I went to the gym yesterday for the first time in months, and I used machines I normally don't use. Like, I have a routine when I go to the gym. I get there, I do about 10 to 15 minutes of like really quick cardio. I walk at a real fast pace, or I'll get on the bike and I'll pedal my big old chubby butt off. And then I go and I do this pectoral fly machine, and I'll do 8-10 sets of 10 with like maybe 20-second, 30-second intervals. And then I take about a 2-minute break and I clean the machine, and then I move over to the hip sled and I do a bunch of leg presses and that kind of stuff. After everything is said and done, because I'll do maybe 2 full routines of all that, I've been there maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. I got a good sweat going. My heart rate's up. Like, I feel like I've had a good workout. But yesterday I decided to try this machine where you essentially like sit in it, you put your arms behind your head and you pull forward, and you do like a vertical crunch. But when you do that, you're pulling the weight with you.
So like a core exercise.
Yes, a core workout. And if anyone has seen my core, it is wide, massive, and jiggly. So it was incredibly hard, because I don't know how not to be stupid, and I am an ego-driven person when I'm at the gym. I looked at the machine and went, well, it starts at 20 pounds, but it goes up to 160. I weigh 440 plus. I can do 160. I put it at 160, and that's what I started with. And it was fine. It felt perfectly fine yesterday. I could barely get out of bed today.
Well, I want to also point out, you're getting older.
Is that what's happening?
And what I have learned in my graceful aging is that things that you've done to your body disappear for a little bit, but they come back, and they usually want to say hi in the mornings.
I love good news. I don't like to think of it as getting older. I consider it leveling up. So I'm level 35. I've almost have enough experience to advance to level 36.
All right then. Well, then I am like a wizard of like life then.
Okay. Well, you are level 45. You'll be level 46 in about what, 17 days?
It's creeping up. Yep. Middle of May is my milestone of survival. And we will, it's just that, a milestone of survival.
Yeah, it's coming.
It is. All right. So, all things aside, we might as well get to the thing that you rushed down here for, which is commercial fishing, commercial fish farming, because there's a difference between commercial fishing and fish farming, right?
Yeah, they're both terrible in their own right, but there is a big difference, yes.
Well, I think terrible in their own right is by scale. When I think of commercial fishing, it's because we are quite literally looting the oceans and destroying habitats to get as much fish as humanly possible.
Well, we're keeping possible. I'm not letting that one go. To some degree, yeah, you're right. But there's a lot of different ways they do it. But the thing that concerns me the most about commercial fishing is the amount of life that they kill in search of a particular fish. You know, when they try to get tuna, they're going to kill a lot of other things just to get their tuna. And that's not unique to tuna fish. That's the most, if you say commercial fishing, people always think tuna fish because it's widely, widely processed. I mean, when you look at a little can of tuna fish, it costs like 80 cents or 90 cents in the grocery store. You don't realize that came out of a fish that weighed hundreds of pounds. It's not like tunas are small fish. They're huge.
Right.
And so they kill a lot of things in their nets and their processes to catch the tuna. And it really it's really heartbreaking and sad because a lot of species are being like overfished accidentally to the point of where they're almost extinct. I mean, they're extinct right now, but it's not looking promising for them. But that's not what we're here. We're here to talk about fish farms, and it's very different. And they're also equally disgusting and terrible, but that's what we're here to talk about.
Well, and they exist because we've done such damage to the oceans and the ecosystems that we've overfished to a point where it's very, very challenging to meet consumption needs. So this is how society has deemed the way to get fish to people is by creating these massive fish farms.
Yes. So I'm going to explain this to people as easily as I can. So if I'm not being concise, I do apologize. I'm going to tie fish farming to standard farming. Now, we have a big issue in this world with the agriculture. I don't want to say agriculture. I guess the industry of processing beef. Beef is probably the biggest one I talk about here. When you farm hundreds of head of cattle or thousands of head of cattle, it produces a lot of waste. Now, because we're humans, we don't really think about water in the same way we do air, but you have to understand the correlation. Water is to fish as air is to humans. Right. So when cows pass a lot of gas and they create a ton of waste and stuff like that, and we have this big industry behind producing food for us, the same thing happens in commercial fish farming. Now, in commercial fish farming, I believe it's off the coast of Scotland or around Scotland, they farm salmon, mm-hmm. and those farmed salmon produce so much waste that they're polluting all the water on the farms. Because like an actual farm with cows, all it really is a bunch of nets and a big circle in the water, and the fish can't swim through it. They can't really swim under it. So they're all just corralled in this one small area. They can't really move. It's packed full, and they just pour loads and loads of food in, and they eat, and they crap, and it goes down, and currents, take it out. And that's bad enough. There's too much waste for nature to take its course, and the things that would feed on it can't keep up with it. But also, they're disease-ridden. When a disease or a parasite gets a hold of a fish, well, it's got thousands of other hosts right next door. It just boop, jumps. So then fish start to die, and you actually lose a huge yield of the entire school due to, poor practices. It's terrible. It's unfair to the animals, and it's disgusting, and people eat this stuff. And another thing that I despise fish farms, because what they do, the feed they feed them normally is like a fish meal base. Normally it's like dead dehydrated fish that's been ground up, mixed with other things to make this fish food. It doesn't have the same nutrients it'd have in the wild. So salmon or is a beautiful pink, and I want to specify this, pink fish due to things they eat in the wild. It turns their flesh pink. Farmed salmon is gray and white. It doesn't have that color. So they add dye to it before it's sent out in the packaging process to make it look like wild-caught salmon. It is absolutely gross. If you buy farmed salmon, let it sit in your fridge for a couple of days, that dye starts to ooze out of the fish, and it starts to kind of look kind of weird because it's losing that artificial color that they give it.
Wow, that I did not know. And it looks like we might have hit a topic that's going to get you going today.
Well, I don't know if it's you hit a topic that I'm actually not completely ignorant about. That's what it is. A lot of the topics we discuss, I have no idea, and I just kind of free think off the top of my head. But I do care about food. I am a chef, but more importantly, I care about Mother Nature. And if you want to be a great cook, if you want to really, really take part in the culinary world, the first thing you have to admit is that Mother Nature is the true artist. That was said by a chef named Marco Pierre-White, but he's completely accurate. And if you ruin or mess with the way nature produces things, you're going to have an inferior product. And when I learned how bad farmed salmon was, I started looking into it. And then I watched a documentary on Netflix, and that just changed everything for me.
Well, and I think that's one thing about, I don't say a lot of nice things about Netflix on a regular basis, but they really did come out with a bunch of documentaries back to back that really hit close to home. The David Attenborough, A Life on This Planet was one of them. I think you're talking about Seaspiracy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did come out with a bunch of them that are worth watching. And it does. It does kind of, it's on Netflix. There's some pieces that might be dramatized, but in general, this is all verifiable. When you talk about that salmon farming, you're talking about a massive amount of waste in one place that your food is consistently swimming in. Fish, if you've ever spent a lot of time around fish, you can throw waste in the water and food in the water, and they eat both. you know, they're very responsive. They just kind of react more than thinking it through at times. So you end up with this really a poor quality food. They'll eat microplastics. They'll eat anything that's in front of them. And these fish never actually experience life. They're much like chickens. See, when I look at this, I look at, you know, me and my vegetables. When I plant vegetables in good soil here locally, we get a flavorful, delicious plant. We get a cucumber that has a taste. When you go to the grocery store, as you call them, water sponges or water sacks, everything just tastes like water. They're in such a hurry to grow as much as they can, as fast as they can. Everything, it's almost like getting a bubbly. You just have a hint of the flavor that was supposed to be in the drink. You know, the food is the same way, where this stuff grown with all the right nutrients is shockingly flavorful.
Well, that's part of it with the, like the edible landscaping thing. One of the big, you know, defining differences between all farms and all homegrown vegetables and fruits is that generally they're allowed to ripen before they're picked. With the commercial agriculture industry, most of that kind of stuff, any seeded fruit, tomatoes, cucumbers, bell peppers are normally picked the moment they're of an acceptable size to be sold. Because by the time they get picked, transported, and they've gotten, you know, to your local market, they've changed, they've died enough. They're not getting riper per se, they're dying. They've turned from green to red, but when you cut that tomato open, the inside is white or it's green, it's rock hard, or if it isn't, it is wet and it may look like a tomato, but it doesn't taste like anything because it never had time to develop the sugars and the proper acid it needs to have that flavor everyone loves, that smell, that aroma. That if once you've grown your own, you know it and you'll never go back.
Well, and it's the same thing with chickens and what you're talking about with fish. Once you have a more natural environment, you get a denser meat when it comes to chicken versus what you would get in these cage farms. And don't get me wrong, when they say free range, they mean in a pole barn. Okay. It's not like you envision them wandering around a farm picking at bugs.
I think that I agree, and I'm sorry to cut you off again, but I think when it comes to chickens, and we're getting too far off the beat for fish farms, but I'm going to say this, when it comes to chickens, the notion of a free range meat bird is anyone that's ever raised birds realizes that it's kind of a counteradictive to each other, because the chickens, I think they're called Cornish hens that are bred. They are a special breed designed for meat. They've been altered in their DNA to a point where even if you gave them a huge field of grass, which chickens eat to run around in, they won't. They will sit there and eat out of their dish and drink out of their water. They will sit with their butts on the ground, and they grow so fast. The reason they sit is because they can't carry their own weight. They grow so fast, they never develop feathers in half their body. By the time they're big enough to butcher, they're still half bald. Like it doesn't matter if they're free range or not. You can stick them in cages. They don't move. Mm-hmm. After 6 weeks old, they're not big enough to go anywhere. And that sounds terrible. I'm only saying that because I've raised meat birds. In fact, last time we bought chickens, I bought one. I bought one meat bird as an experiment. I bought one meat bird and four Amaryllis blues or so. I don't remember the name of the bird, but it's this weird bird we've never had. But the reason we bought it is because they have purple eggs and I wanted to see purple eggs. But I bought the one meat bird to go with it. The idea was that if you take a meat bird, take it away from other birds that are just like it and put it around other chickens, maybe because birds flock and birds tend to think alike and they mimic each other the way fish do schools. I hoped that the meat bird chicken would act more like a regular chicken. It would be up and be moving enough to counterdict the behaviors that the last batch we had. Keep in mind also, when you have meat birds, you're supposed to feed them a specific food that's super high in protein, which encourages their body to produce, you know, weight so quickly. We're not feeding that kind of food. So I'm hoping that I'll actually have a Cornish hen that looks like a regular chicken, not a meat bird. I wanted to know because I was astonished by what I seen when we raised them. And don't get me wrong, it still, even like that, is a much better product than the chicken you get in the grocery stores. It was delicious. They were fantastically tasty birds, but it was kind of disheartening and sad, It was just gross just to watch them sit there and literally be equally spaced between the food and the water. The chicken would eat, then he'd lean over and drink, then he'd lean over and eat. Like it was, he had it all figured out. And that bird was in a little ways my spirit animal, but it was also sad.
Well, and the same thing happens with fish. Well, I think in that documentary that you had watched, that they just keep them swimming in a circle. Mm-hmm. That's to help build the muscle within the fish. But the pros and cons of fish farming are pretty brutal. Before we go into that, I want to just, the U.S. imports 70 to 80% of its seafood, okay? But it still produces a tremendous amount. The United States consumes massive amounts of seafood every year. That, and you'll notice that when I give you these numbers, when I went to the State Department to pull these numbers, they always tell you in money, then pounds. Matter of fact, money is in bold, pounds is this small thing afterwards, but that's just a U.S. thing. In the U.S., we, let's see, salmon, $66 million worth, and that's 36 million pounds is what they gave us for salmon production in the U.S., not what we actually eat, because we, this is that 20 to 30% of what the U.S. needs in yearly, because it imports 70 to 80%.
That's also those prices are based off whole fish poundage. So because what you just read me was what, like $2 a pound, give or take, $2.50. Like you said, 66 was 30 something. It's, those are raw prices for like a whole fish, where they're gonna cut the head off, they're gonna gut it, cut the tail off, they're gonna take the scales off, and they're gonna cut it into, you know, maybe you might get 4 to 6, maybe 8 decent fillets off one giant salmon. But like by then the prices went up to, you know, $15-16 a pound, because they have to make their money because they got to pay back all that garbage.
Right. I was surprised at the numbers for oysters, and that's $219 million for 45 million pounds.
Why are you surprised by that? That is a huge market.
I probably, because I've never really eaten them, but I didn't know it was that much bigger than salmon.
Yeah, absolutely. Shellfish is way bigger than actual fish. It also, you're going to find oysters are huge on the coastlines, and we don't live on the coast, so obviously it's out of our norm here.
Clams, $122 million, yep. And that was only, I think, 11 million pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Shrimp, which I thought was going to be one of the higher ones, because maybe because I eat shrimp, $13 million and 4 million pounds. Maybe we just import more of these ones or something, but this is what the U.S. produces. And then mussels, 9 million and just under 1 million pounds.
Mussels are an old school dish. I bet you if you went back and found a per pound capita, we probably used to go through a lot more mussels than we do now. You see them in high-end fine dining places, but most restaurants don't carry them.
When we went to the lake house on the west side of the state, we tried them there. I wasn't a huge fan. Almost everything they make there is one of the more delicious things I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
I will go back to sticking to either the vegetarian dishes or the fish. I wasn't a big fan of the mussels. It was done in like a sausage and mussel mix, like almost like a jambalaya. Definitely wasn't my favorite, but...
Hold on. What did you have?
It was a appetizer, which was a almost like a soup with mussels and like sausage, Italian sausage.
Okay.
That they had mixed together. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. I wasn't fond of the texture of mussels.
Okay.
So when you look at the pros and cons, this is another one like last week. Remember I told you last week some of the Google results were just infuriating. This is sites trying to say nice things. So what I'm looking at is sites like environmentalconscious.com, stuff like that, mm-hmm. trying to get a middle ground. I'd bounce between that and the State Department, looking for the pros and cons. And some of these are a stretch. Like when they talk about the pros, they talk about using fish farms to stabilize the fish supply. Well, that means two different things. One of them is get us enough fish that we're happy that we're eating fish. Or mm-hmm. what I thought it should be, which is what number two kind of states on here, is it's relief for the wild aquatic animals. It's not. We're still fishing the oceans just as much. We're just now subsidizing the total amount of poundage through these farms. I'm pretty sure we're doing just as much damage and taking just as much fish as we can find from the oceans, even with these farms.
Okay, so you're I'm sure you're right, but this is one of those problems that it falls in the same category as commercial farming and stuff like that. As the richest country or one of the richest countries on the planet, we don't like to want. We like to have things at our convenience at any given time. And it's that desire, that innate habit of all of us that causes these problems. This isn't a normal problem. We should not be overfishing an ocean. We shouldn't go to Walmart and have every possible size of shrimp we could ever imagine available at any given time, dead and peeled and frozen. But we do have that. So I don't doubt that the fishing is still happening at the same rate, and the farming, you know, to some degree had benevolent beginnings. You know, the idea was to, you know, to slow down the commercial fishing and to give us a turn in this, but it's become this monster of an industry of all its own now, and it's absolutely horrendous. I don't think there are pros to it. I don't think there are pros to either one of them. In fact, I am that weird guy that I do honestly believe we'd be better off if they didn't exist. I do think that if you want fish, you should go fishing. I do think that food should be seasonal. I do believe that we started off a long time ago as a hunter-gatherer species, and we should go back to that. And I'm not saying tribalism, but I am saying that I think that commercial agriculture in all facets has practically destroyed this planet.
Well, and without commercial agriculture, we'd go primarily to a vegetable diet, vegetable and fruit diet. And then there would be the people who do. But here's the thing. Let's say you wiped it off the face of the planet. So what would happen is I'm eating primarily fruits and vegetables because I'm not a farmer when it comes to animals. But I'll see a friend over here who has some chickens, and then I will trade them some of mine for some of their chickens, which means they need more chickens. And then someone else comes to them and says, oh, you have chickens. I want chickens. That is the evolution that has led to the current farm situation as it is. Now, what I can tell you is you have penetrated my skull. When it comes to some of these things, I think that the fact that we can go anywhere at any time and get a subpar version of the things we want has kind of ruined the excitement of going somewhere and getting something good.
Good.
So like going to Maine to get seafood and eating, when I was in Hawaii getting seafood, going places that are primarily a seafood area should be different. I shouldn't be able to get the same thing in a subpar method here at Walmart, consume as much as I want. See, you got me naming places now,
mm-hmm.
and kind of ruining the taste of what is there. It should be special to go somewhere and get something from that region.
I agree, but keep in mind that because it's so convenient and because it's so easy to obtain, it's not special. But also, and I really want to hammer this home, when it comes to consumption, when you've had something that's wild caught, that's properly processed, and is cooked, and I don't mean anything fancy, we're talking about Michelin star meals, just cooked well, it's in a league of its own. It's completely different than buying it from the store. One of the best things I've ever tasted in my life was a wild caught rainbow trout. To this day, I've never had a piece of salmon or a piece of like brown or steelhead or any kind of trout, any other fish in that family that compares to it. And I've had some delicious salmon, so don't get me wrong, but this wild caught rainbow trout was just out of this world, and it was natural. It came out of a river, and it was 100% organic as far as a fish goes, mm-hmm. versus going to the store and buying it. They came out of a farm, and the flavor was different. You know, the way it paired with wine was completely different. And it was an experience of its own. And I think that really eating should be like that. And like, I understand that we live in a convenience culture, which is really what I'm getting to call it, is convenience culture. It's nothing to go to Riverside or to go to the local grocer or to go to McDonald's. I'll name all the businesses. I don't even care. And get like a McDouble, you know, a terrible, nasty chicken sandwich that's made from like the scraps and garbage that's got mayonnaise and lettuce. I know I'm going to get us a lot of hatred because people love those things, but it's absolute trash, man. It is garbage. And I understand that everyone's a chef and everyone can cook the way that they might like to, or they see on television. I don't expect them to. I just expect to pay attention to where their food comes from. That's right. That's really what I'm concerned with, because I do believe that if everything was localized, if you had a local farmer that raised cattle and raised chickens for your community, it'd be better products. And it'd be, maybe people wouldn't eat as much meat. Maybe they would eat more fruits and vegetables. Why is that a bad thing?
It isn't. It's just that would be the base of people's diets because it's easy. Now, a struggle's in the winter time for people like us up here, but that's where canning and freezing and all these other things come into play. But when I look at what's considered to be pros, I don't think that they've thought it. I know they've thought it through enough to write it onto the sites, but they say it's a waste reduction from commercial fishing. I don't think that's true whatsoever. I think there's a massive waste when it comes, even just the amount of fish that die and the amount of disease that spreads amongst the fish and the parasites, the fish waste itself, the how much they lose in farming. There's a ton of waste.
Well, what it is, I agree, but it's how do I word this? It's a biased statement. So a while back, you and I had gotten into a conversation about truth and about misinformation, and you had made the comment of that perspective, it's true. Of their perspective, what they're writing is accurate. But we're not talking about his truth or her truth, their truth. We're talking about objective truth. And objective truth dictates that the fish farms give off as much waste, if not more, than the exhaust and the stuff going in the water from the boats. And that's ultimately what they're comparing it to, is the fossil fuel waste for the fishing boats. And that's terrible. And it really is. It's also terrible how they destroy, when they do like the trench fishing, they destroy like
bottom trolling.
Yeah. Well, I call it trench fishing because that's all that's left when they're done. It destroys their, Lord have coral reefs. God, my brain just turned off. But it destroys coral reefs and all different types of ecosystems. But then we have these commercial fisheries. And when I say like all there's thousands of fish in one spot, it's not like they have one. Most places have five or six or seven within like a mile radius. And it's like one big giant tube of fish. And then a few feet to the left, there's another giant tube of fish. And then depending on the species of fish, or if they have them quarantined because of the disease, you might have 50 feet. There's another giant tube of fish. It's absolutely horrendous. We're not talking about like specific or biased truth. It's objective truth. And objectively, it is worse.
Well, and I'm looking at some of the things they say here, and it says it may be a necessary to feed the world's growing population. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think we can diversify what we eat. It says it's employment opportunities, which pisses me off every time I see it. And yes, that's my closest to swearing thus far, is that we don't measure environmental action by dollars. I'm very, very tired of it. On our site right now, we have the corporate sustainability episode on Facebook, and almost everybody underneath it, you want to be sustainable, keep jobs. And it's like the United States, or at least possibly the world, has the worst Stockholm syndrome I've ever seen in my life, that they're willing to destroy everything around them for a couple of bucks. And that's what this shows. It talks about employment opportunity. It says fish farms may mitigate starvation. Again, angers me, because it's not scarcity that's causing starvation. Sure. It's humanity separating classes and not giving the food.
I actually disagree with that too. I disagree with all of it. There was a time decades ago where world hunger was a problem. It's not.
Mm-mm.
It's not a problem. We don't have a shortage of food. We don't have a shortage of people going hungry. We have a shortage of affordable housing. We have a shortage of proper care programs for people that are mentally disturbed and handicapped or disabled. Or there's no shortage of reasons that people are struggling in this world. I'm not talking about this country. I mean, all countries. Food is not an issue. People need to stop with those stupid like they're just trigger points. They're what I call fighting words. Oh, it's what we need world peace. Like, yeah, let me ask you a question, Michael. Like, I want you to answer all the world's worst problems. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to do it.
Oh, it sounds like a political.
But that's what it is.
Debate.
That's what all these are. These are all political topics.
Yep.
Every one of them. And I get really irritated by it. And this isn't a left thing. It's not a right thing. This is completely in the middle, because both do the same thing. They use one word and they argue different meanings of the word, and they how it causes this big issue, and it becomes this big like hot topic. And you see it all the time. You see it all the time. The biggest one in the last, I would say, last 5 years was defund the police. Both sides argued something very different, and it became this big hot topic. People argued and fought about, but it was irrelevant to what was actually the problem with everything that was going on. The same thing with world hunger. There is no world hunger. Are there places in the world that are less developed than others? Absolutely. Yes, there are. Now, is clean and potable water a problem in some parts of the world? Yes. Yes, it is. Infrastructure is a problem in parts of the world. Food is there. As long as humans are omnivores, food exists. Because most animals, if it has a pulse, we can eat it. It's not like if there's dirt, we can grow stuff. I'm not saying you can't get food, but there are bigger issues to deal with. And so these excuses, oh, well, it's helping starve world hunger, it's solving world hunger, or oh, it's creating jobs. Like, no, it's destroying the world, but thanks for trying.
Well, and if you want to solve world hunger, quit wasting. You know, the reason why we have to have these large of scale of farms is because we waste 40% of everything that comes out of it. That there's plenty to share, but our system doesn't allow sharing. So the other thing they tout is it lowers the prices for fish, which just increases the consumption and creates a negative feedback loop for the industry. Now, the cons, there's things in here that, you know, the fact that they use antibiotics, just like any other farm, growth hormones. The bigger thing is that genetic mutations, because as we know, that can become a problem in a lot of ways. And genetic mutations actually can get outside of the farm, because they say, you know, we've got them in with nets, but occasionally fish get out. And when a fish that's disease ridden or has parasites or has a genetic mutation, it can go breed with wild species and wild fish and start to cause this problem in the rest of the ecosystem.
So I agree. And one of the things I will say that is positive, I guess, about farm salmon is salmon die after they breed. So that is something that could kind of fix itself, but it's not going to be a long lasting problem, but for the rest of the fish that gets farmed, or like shrimp or shellfish or that kind of stuff, it is an issue because they do get out, because these aren't exactly high dollar operations. Truthfully, if you wanted to farm a fish, any fish, in a way that was as low risk to the environment as possible, you would build a giant tank or aquarium, if you will, on land and do it completely separated from the rest of the wild population. And then after you'd do what I'd call a culling, when you'd get rid of a whole batch, you know, if you will, you'd pump the water out, you'd filter it, treat it, and then start over. It'd be a much less productive means of farming a type of animal, but it'd be better. Now, ultimately, it'd be a lot lower risk to the environment, and you wouldn't have those risks. Oh, well, it got out, and then this particular fish that was infected with this really terrible type of worm that we thought we eradicated from the planet is now infecting countless other fish before it breeds, before, right, you know, it inevitably passes away. Because that's something I will say, these fish aren't strong. It's not like when you eat a fish that's caught in the wild, regardless of the species, it's been swimming its whole life, it's been moving around its whole life. Fish is very lean. You don't see a wild fat fish. You see a wild big fish, but they're not fatty. When you cook a farmed animal, with the exception of shrimp, most fish, they have fat that comes out of them. You'll see it because it's like white and nasty and jelly-like when it comes out of the fish. That's not normal. It also means you're overcooking it, but it's not normal. It shouldn't be there.
Right. Well, and I think we've touched on a lot of these pieces that were considered the cons, because, and by the way, yes, the salmon may pass after breeding, but whatever genetic mutation that it has earned in the cycle of farming, that will pass on.
Mm-hmm.
That has a possibility of passing on to the natural supply. And so even though that fish dies, any parasites or worms or whatever else it has may go with it, but other fish will eat them. Other animals will eat them. That spread continues. This man-made problem becomes a nature problem. And then we always look around totally confused on what has happened.
Yeah. So one of the worst things about our species, that we're not really great at preventing problems. We're really good at seeing they're coming. We're better at letting them happen. And then we're the best at adapting and overcoming them after we've had to deal with them. But we're not good at stopping what we see. It's like seeing a storm is coming and not closing the windows. Like, we know it's coming, but let's wait till everything in the house is wet before we close the doors.
Well, it's because 40% of the people who are seeing the storm coming says, no, it's not. That's not a storm. That's over there. Well, quit being a wimp.
Well, I'm a big advocate of the don't be a wimp mentality, because I do believe people do need to toughen up. I don't think that waiting until you're dealing with the fallout of whatever terrible situation has begotten you is a good way to succeed in life. I think that, well, it's great that you can, you know, rise above, and you can, you know, pass through strife and adversity. And I do honestly think those are great things to overcome. I don't think that that's the optimal option. If everything in the book says, hey, this is going to happen, you should go, maybe we should change that. Maybe life would be just a little easier if we didn't have to do that.
Yeah, it shouldn't be self-inflicted. So long-term for fish sustainability is the thing that everybody hates hearing, which is eat less fish. It used to be, oh, switch to fish so we can get away from steak and pork and chicken. But the real answer is eat less meat, just in general.
And the real answer is eat less in general. And yes, anyone that's seen me knows I'm the size of a small beluga whale. But I'm saying this from experience. The average person does not need the amount of calories we consume in any given day. I'm not blaming this on me. I'm blaming this on the convenience culture that we have. On, you know, if you look at the back of a bag of potato chips and it says, hey, one serving is 17 chips. Oh, how many servings are in a bag? 17. Okay. Well, that's a problem. If you go buy like beef or chicken, it's sold by the pound. Well, how much should the average person eat? Oh, 6 to 8 ounces. So you're going to cut your chicken breast in half and only cook half? No, the average person makes the whole darn thing.
Right. That's where I'm trying to push down to 4, where I get, because I here's the deal. I am not prepared to be a vegetarian. You know as well as I do. We grew up in a meat and potato lifestyle. Meat and potatoes topped off with a bag of chips. So I'm trying to reduce the amount of processed foods, a lot more veggies, a lot more fruits. You know, my lunch today is an apple, some block cheese, and about 3 ounces of ham. So I'm trying. My biggest problem is eat less. So I'm trying to, again, reset, because I have failed miserably over the last winter. Reset, big piles of vegetables, nice salads, small piece of meat. If there's a processed food on the table, very little of it, but I'm not hiding from noodles or starches. I'm reducing the meat intake for habit purposes.
Well, for no other reason, you can reduce the meat intake because it's getting way too expensive to purchase. But I would say that I could never be a vegetarian. I could easily be a... I don't know. This whole topic is, it's so hard for me because I know everything I should be doing, but then I also know the opposite of that, in fact.
Well, like I've said, I've been a little ashamed that I did so well last summer, then fell off the wagon all winter long, packed on a ton more weight. Now I have to go through this whole process again and restructure my diet, change my taste. And I know when I'm doing it right, because when I hit a fast food restaurant, it stinks. That smell that people crave, that if you are away from it long enough, it actually stinks. It's really quite nasty. And that's when I know I'm doing it right, because that will happen again.
Well, when you eat garbage like we do so often, you get desensitized to the negative parts of it. I attribute something similar to when you drink alcohol. Alcohol doesn't taste good. You can tell me that you think it does, and that's fine. Maybe you are accustomed to that kind of stuff. But when you just taste the alcohol, not what it's made with, not what it's mixed with, but just the alcohol side of it, it's terrible. Your body has a negative reaction because you're actually poisoning yourself. You should not be consuming it. I look at pop the exact same way. I used to drink a ton of soda, a ton of it. I haven't had pop since I had COVID. Now, I've had tonic water a couple times. If that constitutes a soda, then so be it. But I used to drink, I don't know, 3 to 4 20-ounce Diet Pepsis a day. So, right. I mean, it would take me about two and a half weeks to go through a big pack from Sam's. And now, if I were to try to drink, all I taste is the carbonation. Instantly, it's all I taste. And then I get that fake sweetness. Then I get that syrupy crap in my stomach, and I feel like garbage over it. And to take fast food the same way. I don't hardly eat fast food. I will consume it if I have to. I eat a lot. And that's really the majority of my problem is I eat way too much food. I eat when I'm bored. I eat all the time. I may not eat a meal that's bigger than the average person's, but I'm eating again in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go to fast food places, you're right. The smell is detestable. Like when you eat like Taco Bell, which I always love, there's so much grease in their beef that it makes my stomach do somersaults. McDonald's, their food tastes like salt and pepper. There is no flavor to anything there. If you get a McChicken, you're eating mayonnaise, whatever mayonnaise is covering, because I don't know what it is. If you get one of their burgers, you get a meat sponge, tastes like salt and pepper. And if you get a piece of cheese on it, you can taste that cheese. What did I eat the other day for McDonald's? A sausage egg McMuffin thing. And literally, I was eating it, right? All I tasted was cheese. The muffin had no flavor. It was burnt, but there was no flavor. It's just, I could see it was black. I could feel it was crunchy, but it tasted like nothing. The sausage tasted like nothing. The egg tasted like nothing. Literally, all I got was the saltiness of the cheese. And my tongue isn't broken. There's just nothing to this. It's not real food.
Right. I told you I was watching, and I keep rewatching Down to Earth with Zac Efron. And Darren, who is, you know, quote unquote, the sidekick there or the guru, is a food guy. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he talks about, and this this means a lot to me, or is it kind of hit me a little closer to home, was, you know, you may eat tons. You may, you know, ever. I've always been the guy who gets a meal at a fast food place plus a side, and you get all these different things. He's like, you can eat that till you're so stuffed you want to vomit, but your body is hungry because you're nutrient starved. What you put in offers the body no nutrients, and you're hungry again almost immediately. So I started Googling this gentleman, and, you know, things like small amounts of cheese, even though he, you know, he's a vegan, but it stays with you for a long period of time. You get your protein from your greens. You don't eat a ton of protein. Like, my whole life, it was protein, protein, protein if you wanted to lose weight, but that's not how our body's built. So I'm trying to do more natural things. That they do an episode in Sarnia talking about, this is the place where more people live to be 100. You know what they did? They eat local foods that are produced within the region, and they walk everywhere. That was it. That's all they did. There wasn't a fast food joint in the whole area. It was, this lady makes the noodles, this person makes the bread, and they all come together and swap and trade, and they have all this fresh food, and that's all they did. They eat fresh food, and they walked everywhere. So with Edible Landscape Project, it gives me the opportunity to walk around more, because I got to go check all the plants. I got all this food growing, you know, not counting my garden, which usually produces rather well.
Rather well.
I need to continue that trend from last year and avoid things that I have to open a plastic bag for, because that's an indicator. You open a plastic bag, you're getting into processed foods.
Well, yeah, I agree. And this is called realistic sustainability. So obviously I don't expect people not to eat processed foods, but be honest with yourself about it. Don't go to the store and buy that party bag of chips. Honestly, this is what kills me. You could either buy the party bag of chips and try really hard not to eat 5 servings at once, and you have one bag, or you can go to the store and buy the variety pack, which is like 36 tiny itty bitty little bags wrapped in a bigger bag. The embodied energy of that product is so out of this worldly ridiculous, but it's one portion of chips per bag.
Which, as much as my eyes started to twitch when I was listening to you talk about all the bags, you are trying to build a habit. And if you can build that habit, that once you've built that habit, you can then go to the big bag and put 15 chips in a bowl, you know, and walk away. It's one of those things that we just have to figure out. For fish and the fish farming that we're talking about here, to loop us back around, I'm going to have to continue doing what I have been doing, which is 4 to 6 ounces. If I want fish, stay small, get a better quality, always look for something as local as possible, and I get it, it costs way more, and it should. And I'll just wait till I can afford it, you know, kind of thing. I just won't eat as much fish. And when I do, I'll enjoy it in a small portion.
Well, I think that's a part of growing up that most people have missed out on. In our convenience culture, people don't have patience. They certainly don't have the mentality of waiting until the appropriate time to have something. They want it. We want it now. It's that J.G. Worth commercial. It's my money and I want it now. Well, it's my money and I'm going to spend it now. And so they don't understand that you should wait. And I say that because that's just the way our culture is. It's in the middle of October. If someone's like, I want chips and guacamole, they're going to go to the grocery store and they're going to buy their little guacamole seasoning mix and their avocados that are rock hard. And they're going to hit them in a ninja blender. And all of a sudden they've got this subpar guacamole when they could have just waited till everything was in season and they got it from a good distributor that maybe did come from California. But there are good distributors where you can get something from California. It might take a day or two, but you're going to have a better product because it's in season. You know, I'm fortunate. I live next to an apple orchard. Throughout most of spring and summer, I have delicious produce right next to me. Apples and blueberries and strawberries, and they have a small section of like peaches and pears, and they've got, you know, farmers that bring in bell peppers and onions, and like it's all right here and it's all locally grown, so it's wonderful. The rest of the year, though, yeah. What was that, Michael?
Well, no, and you know, before I close us, that's a good point. You don't have to have a massive plot of property and 6 hours a day to eat fresh vegetables and fruits. You can hit those farmers markets, and they're all over the place. For us, I love going to Horrocks when I can. another shameless plug for people who don't pay us to plug them. But it is
that's not a bad place. I like it.
Huge farmers market that I just adore. But also here locally, that's one of the reasons why the Edible Landscape Project has been so successful, is that everybody buys in because there's food everywhere. People are getting fresh food just by walking down the street. And there's not a single person listening to this who can't do the exact same thing wherever they live. They can go on the website. We track every bit of information, everything that's ever happened. We have communication on there when people want to build these programs and have questions. We need food security on a vegetable and fruit scale nationally. We need to make that a thing to where food is everywhere. Just like you said, apple trees. We planted 7 fruit trees here in town. We'll plant another 7 this year so that generations after I go will continue to eat. We had that donation just recently of the fire truck that ends up being like a $5,200 donation to the program, allows us to take care of these plants, take care of these trees, make sure that they're ready for consumption. You know, when they fruit, they're ready for consumption. Mm-hmm. We have the tools, and any city, any person can do the same.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of us do the fact that people need to realize that the food security can come on a local scale. It shouldn't be left to massive. Actually, it shouldn't be allowed for corporations to become huge based off food production. It should be local. You should be able in a small community to take care of each other. And I'm not saying give the farm away. I'm not saying that everything should be free. I'm just saying that if something is grown and produced locally, support it. Plan it. Enjoy it. Utilize it. If for nothing else, feed yourself with it. Don't sacrifice it so you can go to the store and get garbage and put it in your body thinking you're being healthy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big guy too. And that's where that comes from. It comes from most jobs I do sit at a computer and you snack. So now I have to change all those habits again. It is a pain in the butt. And when it comes to fish, I will be always actively looking to see if it's a fish farm product. I will always actively try to find a local source. A lot of times, especially these small towns, the grocery stores will bring in local source things during season. That's the stuff I want. That's the stuff I want to bring into my family.
I completely agree. I think that everyone should use that and they should try to go by that, which I know isn't practical, but I think that if you start, you know, little bit, big bit, if you start with little changes, next thing you know, you're going to be eating better. Your body's going to be feeling better. You're going to start feeling like you're younger because you're not consuming so much garbage.
Yep. And that's exactly it. So I fell off the wagon. It happens. The whole concept of little bit, big bit is that we keep pounding the rock. We keep going back to what we're supposed to do. Everybody can make mistakes. I've written a book about sustainability and I make those mistakes on a regular basis. So I just need to continuously get better, and anyone can. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked it, share it on social media or with a friend. Other ways to support Realistic Sustainability, of course, is by becoming a monthly sustainer on our Anchor hosting site, just by searching Realistic Sustainability or going to greeninyourlife.org/podcast. That's also the same site where you can see the Edible Landscape Project. We just opened up a second tab for season 2 on there, and we just had our first cleanup, so pictures are coming. Also, if you get an opportunity, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment. Any of these things are fantastic for us. The more that the search engines see this interaction, the more they will put us out there where people can see us. And thank you for all of you. I know we talked about some sensitive topics, especially with crypto, but I really appreciate the letters and the information coming in. Anytime we can have a civil interaction on learning, that's part of that little bit, both for you and me. So I greatly appreciate it. And remember, that's exactly what we're doing here. We're just trying to get a little better each week. Little bit, big bit. Thank you so much again. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nick.
And we will see you next week.
Feeling overwhelmed by climate change? Looking for sustainable and ethical brands to support? Then Ethic is perfect for you. Ethic is a simple browser extension that helps you find sustainable and ethical brands online. Learn more at ethic.org. ethyk.org.